From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from Eskenazi Health. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. On today's show, we'll celebrate WFYI's Morning Edition hosts 5 decades in radio, check out Beef and Boards for Little Ones, and meet singer-songwriter Bill Price. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. This week, a local theater can accommodate your mood, whether you're feeling naughty or nice. We'll also meet two of the creators of a web-based serial set in Fountain Square and bearing a close resemblance to real life. But first, two calm voices guide you through your morning and evening commute here at WFYI Radio. Morning man Don Hibschweiler is celebrating 50 years in radio, and yes, he started quite young. Evening man Matt Pelser created this feature to help us get to know Hibby better.
It really started in my parents' basement because I had my own little radio station downstairs. So I was on the AM band, and I'm broadcasting to my mom upstairs, you know.
And she had you tuned in?
She had me tuned in. She better, you know. But I told her I don't take requests. <You know? laughs> So never mind. So I was down there, and the station in Crawfordsville, WCVL, signed on in December 64. Not long after that, I'm like 12 years old, I started hanging out at the radio station. My dad had a friend who worked there, so I started hanging around, just, you know, absorbing everything. And by the time I turned 14, I got a call November 1st, 1966, that they said, you know, we need for you to come on the air today. I remember when I got off, I asked the program director, I said, so when do I turn professional at this? And he said, did you get paid today? I go, yeah. He goes, you're professional. So eventually they put me on Sunday morning.
Music 67 coming your way this Sunday. I'm Don Hibschweiler, inviting you to a new experience in music until 12 noon. Remember, that's this Sunday.
Live promo.
Yeah. So I'm still in junior high school, and basically I did that, you know, almost 8 years.
Did your dad help you build your radio station in the basement? Because
yeah.
Oh, sure. He was a TV repairman in town.
Oh, yeah. And that's how I first, I always loved listening to WIBC. My dad used to come to Indianapolis on a regular basis to exchange parts for his business, get new parts. Or he asked me one time if I wanted to come along, and I said, sure. And he says, well, do you want to go with me everywhere? He said, you're going to be real bored, you know, waiting for me to get the parts and stuff. I said, well, why don't you just drop me off at WIBC? Maybe I can get a tour. And yeah, a guy came out. It was Big John Gillis. Showed me around and let me sit in with Orly Knudsen. And he said, well, said, I'm about to go off. He said, the next guy, though, doesn't like visitors. But you're welcome to stay, you know, if you want to. And that's Chuck Riley.
Ah.
And Chuck came in, and he's, you know, breezing in, getting very frantic, getting stuff all set. So I sat there, and I sat there with him for an hour. So that had a big influence on me, and that's why, mainly the reason why I used the name Riley.
And the reason you went by Jerry in Ann Arbor was?
Well, they already had a guy named Don, and they said, you have to pick another name.
WAAM, Ann Arbor.
Hello, music lovers. Jerry Riley on an absolutely beautiful Wednesday on The Life of Riley. The best, the sexiest, the slimmest, the most handsome disc jockey in the whole world.
What? What? You dispute my claim?
Do you really? Well, the only thing that keeps me from being a bare-faced liar is my mustache. And I lied about that, too.
So that was a lot of fun, but what happened was the station was sold. And I had a friend who had worked at that station in Ann Arbor, who is now the program director of an FM top 40 station in Detroit. So I called him, and he said, yeah, come on in. I need to talk to you. So I went in, and I was hired to do the late evening shift.
And then when you got to Detroit.
Yeah, they already had a Jerry. So I said, pick another name.
WDRQ, Donna Summer with Don Riley. Just have myself another winner for the Gladys Knight LP, Douglas F. Horst. Can I spell that for you? T-H-A-T.
So, yeah, I used Jerry in honor of my dad. And then I just used, Don, which is my real name, finally in Detroit. Stayed in Detroit for about 2.5 years until the station went to pure disco.
Oh, boy.
Didn't last too long through that. So,
but then it was off to Kalamazoo.
Yeah, Kalamazoo. The neat thing, though, about that station was it had an in-ground swimming pool.
I couldn't believe that when I saw that.
Yeah, the studio was built that way. The whole building was built with having an in-ground swimming pool in mind, and there it was. They had an in-ground swimming pool there. So that was pretty cool.
Frampton, can't stand it no more. That pretty well summarizes President Carter's speech last night, doesn't it? It's 3:38 with Don Riley. And to help you save energy in compliance with the president's wishes, plug in your electric clock only when you want to know what time it is.
And from there, I went to WIBC. I was the last overnight disc jockey before they started to make the transition to news talk in 82 and 83. And there, the Chuck had left by 1977. But his name recognition was still so strong, they wouldn't let me use the name Riley. So I was Don McKay.
12:14 with Don McKay. We are going to have some fun here this morning. Yes, we are. It's either that or the boss says six of my friends are going to be carrying me by the handle. So believe me, we will have fun.
And I never could remember that. I had to have a little card put up in front of me to remind me who the heck my name is now. And then I spent 17 years in Lafayette. After a while, they acquired another FM station, and we made that an oldies station.
Good morning, 7:06 on your basic Thursday morning, March 23rd. We're living the life of Riley, playing Name That Baby in just a few minutes. Also got some Neil Diamond for you, The Zombies, and She's Not There. And here's Peter and Gordon on Lafayette's oldies station.
And that's how I met and talked with David Wood quite a bit at Gold 104.5 in Indy. Eventually, a full-time opening came up, assistant program director in evenings on Gold. So I got that in 2002.
All oldies all the time. Gold 104.5, there's your recommended daily allowance of Elvis. I'm Dr. Don, on call this evening with Del Shannon.
And then I came in a year later.
Yeah, then everything went downhill after that, Matt. That's what happened.
I came in, and 2 years later, it was
gone.
Jack.
Dr. Don Riley's got the oldies countdown as usual.
Yep. Yeah, that actually happened. That was in March 2005. Mm-hmm. I was in Lafayette. I'm starting back to Indianapolis when I get a phone call. And it's David saying, can you get here in an hour? We're going to have a meeting. This is Sunday afternoon. And that's when they told us we're changing format in a half an hour. And yeah, we were given a generous severance package and basically let go. And after that, I kind of drifted into sales. And that's where I met you again. Got a job in sales in Crawfordsville, where you were the program director of the radio station. Jill Sheridan was there, too.
She sure was.
From WFYI News. And so I was doing sales. Yeah, that didn't work out too well. So then another friend of mine I'd worked with, she was doing news at WIBC. And she told me that, they needed another part-time news person here. So I went in and interviewed, and they said, you'd make a good news anchor. So we're going to make you a reporter. And then I became, I did finally become the news anchor. That was afternoons on their statewide news network, Network Indiana. Then after I left there, I got a call from Jill Sheridan, who's working at WFYI. I started doing morning edition, been there about 2.5 years.
Have you had fun?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's been a fun 50 years.
Not all of it. No,
not all of it.
Not
sure.
All of it. But you kind of keep track of your favorite stations. Being at WCBL the first time for me is number one. Number two was Wham in Ann Arbor. Number three would be Gold 104.5. Number four is WFYI, and then number five, first time I was at 1070 WIBC. And actually, WFYI was number five until they held a big party for my anniversary. And they moved up to four.
And then they...
It was kind of a toss-up at that point, So.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
Well, thank you now.
WFYI Radio's Matt Pelser with our colleague Don Hibschweiler. Join us in wishing Don many more decades of great radio.
I'd sit alone and watch your light, my only friend, through teenage night. Is there everything I had to know? I heard it on my radio. You gave them all those old times.
When I say Fountain Square, what comes to mind? Art galleries? Alternative music venues, bars, restaurants, maybe burlesque? Tune in to the web series created by my next guests, and you'll likely see a bit of each of these elements, plus some fascinating characters with complex relationships to each other and to their art. You might even encounter an alien, and not the illegal kind. Amy Ward and Matt Panfil are multidisciplinary artists who came up with the concept for Fountain of Squares, and they visited between shooting episodes to tell me how the series was created and where it might go.
All right. You're both artists. You work in a lot of different mediums. But where did filmmaker come into the picture? And how did you decide to work together and with Shannon and with some of your other colleagues? They're pointing at each other.
Yeah.
Who wants to tell the story, the origin story?
I met Matt through Raw, and he was my videographer. And he was very easy to get along with.
Thank you.
He's a great team worker. He's going to be a star. Like, he was a star a long, long time ago before he became a human. But so here we are, human form.
We're all stars.
We're all stars.
Cosmically speaking.
I actually picked up on that from one of the episodes of Fountain of Squares.
Yeah.
And we should, for anybody who doesn't know what RAW is, tell us about RAW.
RAW is a international art organization. Yeah.
With a chapter
put,
in Indianapolis.
They put on
with
monthly showcases.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, sir. And I think they only do like showcases twice a year at the at the Murat.
Mm-hmm. And so that's how we met. And last year we had a conversation about how to continue to promote different artists of all kinds of backgrounds. And yeah.
And it looked like the best option was to focus on a very art-centric neighborhood in Indianapolis, which is Fountain Square. Kind of comes to mind. You know, it's where they have First Fridays and I think a lot of the coolest gallery shows.
And it's quirky.
And it's quirky. And not just the artists in the traditional sense that you mentioned, but, you know, you've got coffee roasters, you've got artisanal brewers, you've got people doing great things with hair, with body art, with... just about every art form is somewhere in Fountain Square, architecture. So I have to ask, so this you're creating regular webisodes of Fountain of Squares. How much real life do you draw on for the plot?
Yeah, well, you know, it started kind of as a way to make something entertaining that would highlight art events going on. And so I wanted the characters to be realistic to a degree, but it quickly became pretty fanciful. And by the end of it, I think it'll come full circle and get kind of realistic again. But, you know, I wanted the characters to be these quirky artist types that were also realistic as to who you would find on, say, a First Friday, you know, roaming the halls of the Murphy Building.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And there are conflicts.
Yeah.
Like real life.
Yeah.
Lots well, just like real life, and some that are more kind of supernatural than natural.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about the guy who might not be human.
Right, but he might just be a performance artist, you know. So, I think he might not be human in the same way. You know, maybe Andy Warhol wasn't necessarily human, right? More of an alien or a vampire.
Tell me about the writing process. Is there brainstorming first? Is there like a writer's room where everybody gets together over coffee or beer and just says, what do you feel like this character should do next? Or what should happen to this couple next?
I wish it was more democratic than that. I usually just bring scripts that I write to the group, and then we read over them.
There's ad lib, and then there's I would say that other people have contribute in the sense of, hey, I see my character doing this, or could we talk about XYZ that's actually happening around the time that we're releasing?
So, right, and a lot of the dialogue is kind of open to working with a lot of really funny, you know, naturally comedic actors who also happen to be artists. In their own right. So I give them a lot of free
room
to improvise.
All the actors are different types of artists.
Yeah. Yes, right.
you use venues in Fountain Square. People have venue owners and managers been pretty welcoming to you when?
Yeah,
they really have been. Yeah, we've shot in a lot of really cool locations. You know, the Oil Wick and the Primary Colors, and I'm trying to think where else.
New Day Craft.
Mm-hmm. Fountain Square Brewery, of course, which hosts the screenings when a new episode comes out.
What do you know about your audience so far?
I don't know.
That's a really good question. I think that they appreciate – it's fun to be there at the screening because I haven't seen – I'm usually I'm around when Matt's filming, but to see it all come together and see everyone's reaction, it's fun. I think that probably mostly what works best for us is having Fountain Square, that area. It's already known to be weird and different, and then taking Matt's viewpoint of things and his writing, it goes well. It's not Carmel. Probably wouldn't be able to get away with what we're doing in Carmel and say, hey, can we come in and film?
Sure.
So, why do you think that? I'm just curious.
Different, I don't know if it's a different audience so much as a different kind of aura, different atmosphere.
Different nature.
Right. And even Fountain Square is beginning to get a little more, I'd say gentrified than, say, it was 10 years ago. It'll always push to someplace else. There will always be these recurring cycles of artists trying to find a new space, and then all of a sudden businesses come into that space that destroy the very ambiance that the artists created in the first place that attracted them to that space. And that's an infinite loop that artists just have to deal with anywhere.
You've heard the expression, you know how to tell the pioneers, right?
They're
the ones with the arrows in their backs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, break a leg. I hope you can stay in Fountain Square till the end of these stories.
Oh,
we
yeah.
will. Thank
yeah.
you.
Amy Ward and Matt Panfil are part of the team behind web series Fountain of Squares. You can see it by searching Fountain of Squares on YouTube, and be sure to connect to their Facebook page to stay current on screening parties for new episodes. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Later this hour, a leg lamp, a BB gun, and some uncomfortable but very funny family dynamics are all on one stage in two productions at one address on Mass Ave this season. But first, Jolene Ketzenberger talks with chef Greg Hardesty of Recess about his career and how the indie food scene has changed.
Okay, so first let's talk issues in Indianapolis, you know, issues facing the food community.
Well, you know, it's with all the restaurants opening, it is very much, I think, sort of a bubble that's going to burst, and there's only so many people that are going to go to restaurants and eat, and there are only so many people that can work in restaurants. So I think we're starting to feel the bulge sort of coming around the You know, it's going to be a tough time.
20 restaurants opened in the last couple of months. I mean, that's a huge number for, I think, this size of city.
Yeah, I was actually had this conversation with my 19-year-old daughter last night, and she's like, "No, it's great. It's going to be a bigger city." I'm like, "Well, the city isn't getting bigger. Just there's more restaurants. So, you know, there's a pie and there's slices, and we're all taking a little smaller sliver." So. You know, I think there has to be a correction, and I think it will. You know, it's basic economics there. You know, there's a correction that always happens.
Right. So the question is whether we can sustain the growth. You know, we've had this, you know, this discussion has come up in the craft beer industry as well. You know, can we support one more craft brewery? I don't know, but they still seem to be opening. But you're right, there's probably going to be a correction down the road somewhere.
I would think so. I hate to think of all the people that are going to lose money because I think there is a correction, just like the housing and you say the craft beer. You know, I'm going to do my part to keep them all alive. You know, on an honest note, I really think there is there's going to have to be something that kind of tapers this because we can't just keep growing.
Now, we've seen a lot of national attention to our restaurant scene. I think more is probably coming down the road. You've had your share of a national attention as well. What do you think about, you know, the whole awards thing? You know, is it something to continue to strive for? What's your take on the importance of awards?
I think it helps a community grow, you know, a culinary community grow, which is awesome. With that comes a lot of responsibility to continue to grow it, to continue to allow people to come into your restaurant, to come into your world, to come into your philosophy and move on, and hopefully allow people to understand what you believe in and believe that it is a true goal, and not just for your own self-promotion, but to grow community and build this city, because that's what I've always been about. Is I came back from Los Angeles and San Francisco because I wanted to say this city can be a great city. I'm starting to see it, and it's pretty cool. I feel really good about that.
Describe the food scene here in Indianapolis when you first started.
Now, I got here, and you know, I came from L.A. and San Francisco and was ready to take the world by fire. At that time, it was Tony Hanslett's, a few other chefs that I really respected. But I'm sure that I was a little bit arrogant and cocky. But I quickly realized that I wasn't going to set the world on fire. So I sort of settled in and decided, all right, I'm going to do my part. That felt a lot more comfortable for me. That's where I am now, and I just want to continue on with that momentum.
How do you keep that momentum? How do you keep excited about what you're doing and where you're going?
Well, I think that change is always good. I love change. Obviously, I change my menu every day, so I'm not afraid of change. But complacency is the devil to me. You know, I'm always looking for the next thing. I'm always looking for what can I do. I know that I have actually been a victim to complacency in the last couple of years and sort of settled in. And I went through a little period there where I was sort of bored and lost my way. But I know that I'm going to be 48 here in a couple weeks. I'm looking forward to the future. I'm looking forward to making some changes, diversifying my own skills and my own demographic that I've already tapped into. I'm not looking for new demographics, but I'm just looking to diversify and doing something new for the future for myself to get myself excited. I like change and I love challenging myself, and so I'm looking forward to 2017.
Jolene Katzenberger with Recess's chef Greg Hardesty. Hear Jolene's Eat Drink Indie Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2 The Point. It's not just children who can get a little, well, overwrought this time of year. There's just so much to do and so much food and drink and family. Last year, Theater on the Square offered both naughty and nice productions to give patrons whatever kind of attitude adjustments they needed, and they're reprising the tradition. Artistic director Lori Raffel joined me to talk leg lamps, BB guns, and an assortment of coping strategies for the mad dash to the new year.
So you're really attracted to this whole naughty and nice duality, aren't you?
Absolutely.
You know, most theaters consider it an accomplishment to stage one holiday show. Are you just crazy or what's going on there?
We are crazy, yes.
Okay.
Right. You know what? I did it last year, and I even asked a few people, like, am I crazy that I want to do this? And it turned out so well last year that I just couldn't see not doing it again. The naughty show is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Mm-hmm. And the nice is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the naughty starts an hour after the nice.
So if you're feeling a little too saccharine, you can stay around, have a glass of wine between the two shows and see the naughty one.
Exactly.
Well, now that makes a great deal of sense. I'm curious, did you have time to do audience analytics? Do you have a sense of audience overlap last year between naughty and nice?
Yes, and we had like 30% that came to both. And I sent an email out to with a Survey Monkey to everyone who saw A Christmas Story last year. Mm-hmm. And I said, would you come to it again if we did it again? And 70% said that they would, and that they would make it like an outing. And that was what was really fun, was all the families that came last year dressed up like the characters, dressed up in pajamas, in matching t-shirts for the whole family. So So I thought, let's do it again. It was really fun, and we still have the leg lamp. So,
well, you have to build your season around a leg lamp.
Exactly.
That's an investment. And Gene Shepherd, Indiana native. Was this a favorite movie of yours coming up?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
And this year I was talking to Dan Scarborough about directing this coming season, and he started talking to me about his son, Peter, and how they loved the movie and that his wife was sick of watching it by the time, you know, that Christmas came. And so I thought, well, how fun would it be to have him direct it, you know, this year and get a completely different look at it? And it's really fun. I saw it yesterday and it's just so much fun. And, you know, it's different than mine, which is perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. So you've got the through line of people know the story, they know the jokes, and, you know, people who so the stage adaptation is pretty true to the film, right?
It's very, yes, it is.
Don't email us. We know that it was a book before it was a film, so
yes.
We know that. Well, that's what a lovely tradition, but then the surprise element of changing it up a little bit each year.
Yes, yes. The stage is completely different. You know, I helped him design it, but it's kind of a whole male thing this year, and they've done a great job with it.
So let's talk naughty.
Yes.
A Christmas survival guide, adults only. Tell me more about that. Is some language or some...
There's a little bit of language. It's nothing like our naughty from last year, mm-hmm. which was really naughty. But this is more really fun. Naughty, and there's a little bit of language, but I would say 14 and up would be okay.
Okay.
And there's a lot of music to it. Levi Burke is our music and vocal director, which I was thrilled to get because I'm directing, but I'm not a music person. So I said, I gotta have somebody strong, and he is wonderful. And our cast of five is three girls and two guys. And they're wonderful singers. And then we threw in a sketch by Mark Harvey Levine and then kept with the rest of the material. And it's just really fun. Like, instead of the 12 days of Christmas, it's the 12 steps of Christmas. And, like, eating too much chocolate and, you know, drinking too much around your family. And then a really fun Silver Bells that just is, at the end, you're just so overwhelmed with. They make Christmas come so soon and so fast and all your responsibilities. And it's really cute and funny. And then, like, Santa's a guy who plays a mild Santa who sings about how it's his one time a year to be the most important person,
aww.
You know, that he knows. Yeah. There were a few kind of sappy things that we tossed. Oops.
So did you put these sketches together? Did you from... How did you put this together?
Well, there is an actual script and score that goes with it.
Okay.
But I added the Mark Harvey Levine sketch because, you know, I loved working with him when we did stuff at the Phoenix. And he had just this perfect one that he sent me that is just perfect to add in. And it kind of gives you a break from the music. And it's really cute. So I did that. And then we're kind of mixing it up with who does what. And our stage manager, Nikki Sarah, she gets to do a few things. And Levi's playing the piano for the whole piece. And he gets to do some stuff, too, because he's very talented, in not only in music, but also singing, which he may not want to get around. But
Uh-oh, it's too late.
But, yeah, so we've done, you know, in the transitions from scene to scene, we've kind of made our own. So I'm having so much fun with it. I really am enjoying myself. Directing it.
Theater on the Square's artistic director, Lori Raffel. Whether you want to bask in the niceness of A Christmas Story or get the giggles with the slightly naughty A Christmas Survival Guide, TOTS.org can set you up. You can find programs that inspire a love of the arts in children all over Central Indiana. And WFYI's Jill Sheridan and her two young children have been exploring our arts scene together. This week, Jill and her 5-year-old daughter, Veronica, visited Beef and Boards for a performance of The Little Mermaid, part of the theater's children's programming.
On our way to Beef and Boards to see a production of The Little Mermaid, I ask Veronica what she's most excited about.
See Ursula.
So you do want to see Ursula?
Yeah.
Even though it might scare you?
Yes.
When we arrive at the theater on Indy's northwest side, she remembers when we went to see Snow White last fall. The theater experience made an impact.
What did you like about it last time?
When all the elves were coming around all the people, that's what I liked.
You liked how there was an audience?
Yeah.
Watching on the stage?
Yeah. Rice Krispies.
Oh, you like the Rice Krispie treat.
We enter the front of the house. It's packed with young children, many of them dressed in Little Mermaid outfits, and parents shuffling them around.
You want to follow me? I'll show you that.
I need to buy them.
I think they got pretty good seats. Yeah, he said they're good.
The stage is set. The Rice Krispie treat is at the table.
All right.
The set makes an impression.
What do you see?
Reading the program, we discover our cast of characters.
Bobble, an energetic bullfrog. Seahorse, swordfish, angelfish. King Poseidon. Melody is the name of the Little Mermaid. What's the name of Ursula, though? Oh, here we go. An evil sea witch named Seaweed.
Eddie Curry is the artistic director at Beef and Boards. He says children are open-minded about changes from the big screen version of The Little Mermaid.
The character names might be a little bit different. The music is going to be different. But the base, the root story is the same. And the kids accept that within 2 minutes.
There will also be no Disney tunes. The rights are pretty expensive, and the fairy tale has been adapted.
The Little Mermaid happens to be written by a good friend of ours who was originally out of Chicago, a Jeff Award-winning director and choreographer up there. His name is Mark Robin.
The show gets underway. There is no recording during the performance, but a tape song from a live performance gives a good impression of how interactive the experience can be.
If you won't dance with me, they will. Everybody up, out of your seats.
Oh.
Because here we go. Snake it to the left. Snake it to the left.
The children's theater experience at Beef and Boards is designed to entertain and hopefully provide building blocks for a future supporting the arts. Curry says in some instances, theater can also break down barriers.
We have a father who has a daughter who is autistic, and she has Down syndrome, and she had trouble communicating, and he discovered that that was the way to help her communicate.
The show only runs about an hour, the perfect timing for a five-year-old attention span. And it's harder than you think to get a critique.
Just tell me what you thought about the play.
Good.
Who was your favorite character?
Can
you talk closer into the microphone?
One special element of the Beef and Boards program is the meet and greet afterwards.
You are her favorite.
Rebecca DeVries McConnell played the evil sea witch, Seaweed. She talks about what's special for an actor playing the villain.
Well, it's always fun to tell that aspect of the story. You can let certain parts of yourself come out that are usually hidden.
The line is long to greet Melody. Gabrielle Harker says she was bitten by the theater bug at a young age after seeing her first show on Broadway.
It really just struck that chord in me, and I caught that theater bug, and I got to meet some of the cast afterwards for my birthday.
Harker says there's something special about performing for children.
Oh, it's so wonderful. The kids are always such a joy to perform for. They are always so engaged, and they talk back, and it's fun to hear their feedback. And it's also such a great opportunity to expose them to live theater and to inspire them to hopefully one day be performers or, you know, support the arts.
On our way out, we run into two other five-year-olds. They're both dressed in mermaid outfits and say they love the show.
What was your favorite part?
I don't know.
I guess theater reviews are still a few years off.
When that girl went up all the
way. WFYI's Jill Sheridan and her five-year-old Little Mermaid, Veronica. Beef and Board's next children's production opens February 17th, and it's Pinkalicious the Musical. Pinkalicious loves pink and wants everything in her life to be pink. Her dream is to radiate pink, and after overindulging in pink cupcakes, she wakes up pink and the adventure begins. So, I like the color pink. Jill, you kind of like the color pink.
Everybody
you're wearing a little pink
all
today.
All girls like the color pink,
it's
I think.
True.
But this sounds like a really fun production. We have to wait till February, though, but it's nice to see that Beef and Boards are doing more of those children's productions.
Absolutely. And, you know, all of us can get a lot of pink in our life because, as you
No, it's the time of sugar plum fairies.
Boy, it certainly is. Nutcracker mania.
Indeed. And we have some other things to get more pink into your life and more sugar plums in your life on that calendar we call What'll We Do? What do you have? Do you have a nutcracker?
Well, I actually don't.
What? I'm shocked.
Because I think there are so many of them that are going on right now. Although I do know that coming up next week, we're going to hear a little bit more about the Indiana School Ballet's nutcracker.
You went on site.
I did. I spent an evening with one of their rehearsals, so we'll hear more about how they're portraying that classic ballet on next week's show. But in the meantime, coming up at the Indy Fringe Theater down there on Mass Ave, they've got all kinds of fun holiday shows for you to take part in. Still yet tonight, December the 3rd, and again the next couple of weekends, the 9th and 10th, the 16th and the 17th, it's Love Accurately.
Not actually,
which everybody, that's like a holiday classic,
it is.
Romantic kind of movie. Well, this is the play, Love Accurately. So this is definitely a comedy with a little bit of music and romance and real life tossed in.
Oh, it sounds like fun.
All for everybody. And you can also get some discount vouchers, too, if you go to their website. They're supporting some of the local restaurants on Mass Avenue. So they're working some combo deals down there at the Fringe. So you go to indiefringe.org to learn more about that.
Hey, next Sunday, December 11th, the Indiana Historical Society is marking Statehood Day with a 200th birthday bash with hands-on activities, programs, and treats, both things you can eat and drink and things you can enjoy. For guests of all ages, it goes from noon to 4:30 at the Indiana History Center. It's free for Indiana Historical Society members or included with admission to the Indiana Experience. And it features all kinds of wonderful celebrations marking our 200 years of statehood. One of the highlights is sure to be, you just mentioned Indy Fringe. Indy Fringe is doing two performances of Harrison, the musical, which is an improv hip-hop musical about Indiana's founding fathers. Hey, that sounds familiar. Uh-huh. Hey, if it's a good idea, if it's a good idea, Lin-Manuel Miranda, we're going to copy it. There will be a couple of performances also by the Indiana Repertory Theater with excerpts from their Finding Home Indiana 200. All of this and so much more going on next Sunday, December 11th, Statehood Day at the Indiana History Center.
And if we haven't given you enough ideas of events to take part in around the city, you can learn more at the Art Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. It's at indiearts.org/guide.
Or you can join us again next week for our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, and I'm Sharon Gamble. Singer-songwriter Bill Price didn't mean to create a 2-CD set with a journal, poems, short stories, essays, posters, artwork, and more. It happened as a result of a long road trip. I invited Bill to share his inspiration, and we started with a track from his new collection, I Can't Stop Looking at the Sky.
Trial and error spins me round and round. I've been climbing the stairs, climbing upside down. But blinding me bright, a spotlight strikes the stage.
So, before we turn the microphone on, we were talking about how hard it is to categorize some music and how natural it is for people to want to say, oh, Bill Price is a fill-in-the-blank artist, folk, pop. Do people push you, especially when you tour, do they push you for a description, for a category to fit tidily in?
Yeah, I think they do that with everybody. I mean, they want to know what kind of music do you play. And for some people, that's a pretty easy thing to describe. And for others, it's not. I mean, I always say singer-songwriter, but when I think of that, I think of people like, Paul McCartney or Paul Simon or Pete Townsend. You know, they're great songwriters, but they're not what a lot of people think of, like, say, James Taylor or, somebody with an acoustic guitar that's telling a story or a ballad. you know, that's kind of the traditional description, definition of a singer-songwriter. But and I have songs like that, but I have a lot of songs that aren't like that too.
No,
so.
And that's what I love about the collection, Can't Stop Looking, I Can't Stop Looking at the Sky. But what it put me in mind of, speaking of trying to categorize, is the 19th century poetic cycles of poems that were set to music by people like Schubert and Schumann.
Wow.
It's a song cycle, or two song cycles, actually. And I want to know where did this project start? Did it start with a single song, or did it start with a photograph? Or because you're not only are you very versatile musically, you're a designer, you're a photographer, you write prose as well as poetry as well as lyrics. So where does this start?
Well, it's interesting because it seems like there's a trend for a lot of people to artists of all types to come up with some idea or concept and then execute it,
mm-hmm.
because it's kind of easy to market and describe, and you know, people coming up with very cool things. But this was not like that. This was simply a trip that I took to the West, and I was in need of a big break in life, and I decided to go back to my two favorite places, the Black Hills in South Dakota and Glacier National Park, and I had become a Lewis and Clark geek, and so I decided to stop at some of their places and keep a journal. So I was gone over 3 weeks, and it was a life-changing trip, and I didn't listen to any music. I came back. I really didn't care about music. But then all of a sudden, I was flooded with a lot of inspiration. And
after you got back?
After I got back, musical inspiration. And I wrote some songs, and then I was just planning to do my next CD, but I had too many songs, and I started to see some common themes in my older songs and these new songs. And it just evolved into a bigger project. And then I thought, I don't really want to tell people what these songs are about. I want them to interpret them.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, they really want to know, they should read my journal. And I'm not really a journal person. But it wasn't written to be read by anyone. So I decided to include that. Because as I got further into the journal on the trip, I kind of enjoyed the idea of being a writer. And then it evolved into a bigger package. And this additional book of poems and short stories and essays, they're about the same, all these kind of very broad themes that I was sort of dealing with from the trip. And so it wasn't like I said, well, I'm going to go out west and take a camera and my guitar and write a song about traveling through Iowa. It was not really that kind of a thing. So it kind of just organically evolved, and it turned into this big, crazy thing. So
if this is too personal, that's okay. But do you mind if I ask why you needed the break?
I was just kind of burned out. I used to go west when I got out of college and do photography and hike. And, you know, my mother and father had both passed away, and my mother had Alzheimer's. So, you know, that was just, I just didn't go anywhere for like over 15 years. And I was just tired of everything, I think.
Yeah.
And so I just needed a break, both geographically and I think mentally and I suppose spiritually. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go to these places that mean something. And I was skeptical about what I might find, but that was, you know, it was incredible trip.
Having had that experience, do you have another trip planned in the future?
Well, to be honest, I've been back every year since. That was in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it to be, it's like a place I have to go. And I don't always go to the same places, but generally, I'm kind of generally following the Lewis and Clark Trail.
Yeah,
and so I've started doing, starting to do music shows out there over the last 3 or 4 years. And was actually, my project was in the Montana Book Festival. So I was actually out west twice this year. So it's kind of become a bit of a habit.
How did you know this project was complete? How did you, or did you just say to yourself, okay, I can't add one more song, I can't add one more page?
That's a good question. I think I just had all the songs that I felt were fitting, and the CDs are long. They're over 70 minutes apiece. So there physically wasn't really room for any more music. And I really didn't even know that the songs would work in the order that they do. I had a gut feeling they would. There's enough variety and interest. And so I ended up grouping them in what I call dispatches instead of chapters. So they're grouped kind of by theme. And
from the trail, dispatches from the Lewis and Clark exploration.
Exactly. So there's an evolution. There's not a narrative that runs through the project, but there's an evolution of ideas. There's kind of a beginning and an end, although it's very open-ended. But what's funny about your question is that I had written five additional songs that actually did not fit. They didn't fit in terms of space, but they stylistically are more what we were just talking about, singer-songwriter. They're more acoustic. The meaning, it's about the same topics, but the meaning is much more clear in these songs. They're not quite as abstract. So I felt like they kind of gave too much away. So that actually is going to come out sometime in 2017 as a little five-song EP, and there's actually a coupon in the project for that. So I kind of wasn't finished in a way. I kept writing, but I kept saying, I got to start writing about something else. So to answer your question, I guess it just felt like I had said about as much as I could say.
Bill Price, the Indianapolis-based artist's new project is called I Can't Stop Looking at the Sky. It features more than 2 hours of music, plus essays, short stories, poems, artwork, and more. Check it out and hear excerpts of Bill's other projects at billprice.info. That's Bill Price, just like it sounds, .info.
You can call me. You can write me that letter.
Up next, the Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talks with brothers Addison and Lewis Rogers of Busman's Holiday.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto. I'm joined by Lewis and Addison Rogers of Busman's Holiday. They have a new LP out on Joyful Noise Recordings. It's titled Popular Cycles, and you can go to joyfulnoiserecordings.com to purchase a physical or digital copy. Addison and Lewis, you brought five songs to share with us today. Thank you for being here.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
What's your first song for us?
I'll go first.
Yeah, Addison, what's your first song for us?
My first song is from Lambert, Hendricks, and Bavon. This vocal jazz track by these guys that really popularized vocalese. One track that didn't make it onto the original recordings but came out with the CD is their take on Bye Bye Blackbird.
Blackbirds leave as soon as the cool breeze blows. They fly straight down south where all of the sunshine goes. Well, I'm homesick too, so I'm gonna back right up and go where the blackbirds go. So
back up, care and woe, here I go, swinging low. Bye-bye, blackbird.
Every time I hear John Hendricks, I just feel so good.
Yeah, I love John Hendricks. Thank you for picking this.
Of course.
And number two, what's your second song for us?
Let's Lewis? See. I'm going to pick a song from a Paul McCartney album called Red Rose Speedway. It's called Dragonfly, Little Lamb. And it's like, I had heard, you know, all of Paul McCartney's albums except for that one. This was kind of one of the 70s ones that had totally gotten lost on me. And this song just totally took me over. It's like amazing.
I have no answer for you, Little Lamb. I could help you out, but I cannot help you in.
Number three is from Jay Dilla. It's called Fuck the Police. And and this track, there's just so much going on. Like, sonically, it's amazing. You know, we've spent whole nights just listening to this track over and over and over again. And then, like, what he gets through with the lyrics and the rhymes and stuff is just fantastic. I guess it came out of him having a run-in with the cops where they just, you know, profiled him, and he was so enraged by that he made this track. The sounds and the sample is just fantastic, and like it charges you up so awesomely.
Track number four.
Yeah, I'm going to pick... There's a Stevie Wonder track. It's from Fulfillinus' first finale, and it's called Heaven is 10 Zillion Light Years Away.
They say that heaven is 10 zillion light years away.
I'm not religious, but it makes me feel religious when I hear it. It's just like you, Stevie Wonder sells me on becoming a believer. When you listen to this song, you go, "Whoa, dang!" You
know. It seems like there's just about anything out there. Stevie Wonder's the one to convince you on.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Stevie Wonder could convince me of almost anything.
Yeah, it's true. Just so happens that he sings about beautiful, yeah, joyous things,
yeah,
but he easily could just turn a generation,
yeah,
into like Satan worshippers.
With that voice,
Satan worshipper businessman.
Yeah, it's a good thing that he went the other way.
Yeah,
and we're here with Lewis and Addison Rogers of Busman's Holiday. They have one more song to share with, mm-hmm, us. Addison, are you taking this one?
Well, we decided to sort of go in on this one. So
okay, this is a joint.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
we are brothers after
exactly
all. Must make it fair.
A record that's meant so much to the both of us is Randy Newman's Sail Away. And Old Man, in particular, is like such a heart-wrenching song about so much. And we agreed, talking about it earlier today, it's just so human.
The sun has left the sky, old man. The birds have flown away.
And we've been talking with Lewis and Addison Rogers of Busman's Holiday. They have a new record out on Joyful Noise titled Popular Cycles. And guys, what's the best way for people to keep up with you online?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, we've got a website, busmansholidayband.com. I'd say probably Facebook is the best.
Busman's Holiday Band is the one that we control the interface.
Yeah, busmansholidayband.com.
Thank you guys for the awesome songs. Appreciate
it. Oh, yeah,
it.
Thank you.
Kyle Long with Addison Rogers and Lewis Rogers of Busman's Holiday. Here, Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 9 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for spending some time with The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Today's contributors included Matt Pelser and Jill Sheridan. You can hear our program twice each week on 90.1 FM, Saturday mornings at 7 and Thursday evenings at 8. And if you hear something you like and want to share, go to WFYI.org for our podcast. Tune in next week when we'll learn about the Indiana State Museum's big renovations, participate in a rehearsal for the Indianapolis School of Ballet's production of The Nutcracker, and find out who Herman Melville's secret sweetheart was. And of course, we'll also have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.